Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Of what is now going to be considered one of the great sports weekends we've seen ever. With the lack of sports that we've had, we're back Monday morning at 9:55. It's DiPietro, it's Canty, it's Rothenberg with you, 98.7 ESPN. Mel Kiper Jr., I wonder, and we welcome in, of course, Chris and Rick. And Chris, do you think that Mel Kiper goes through like a little depressive time now for the next couple weeks after finishing yet another NFL draft?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't do that, Dave, because he talks about it. As soon as he gets done with the current draft, he moves on to the next draft. I think in the next week or so, he puts out his preliminary projections for next year's first round. So Mel Kiper is nonstop, round the clock, round the calendar, scouting these college prospects.
So how was your weekend? Did you have a nice weekend, Chris?
It was a good weekend. I thought we had good drafts by both local teams. Got a little last dance action last night with the Bulls, and they zoomed in on Rodman and Phil Jackson. So it was a really good weekend, Dave.
All right. And Rick, I'm sure you had a lovely weekend with Uno and all the Monopoly battles and tic-tac-toe and all that good stuff.
Not a great Saturday. Great Saturday. Horrendous Sunday.
Why?
Yesterday was a complete disaster.
Why so bad?
Because of
the weather?
Well, weather wasn't great, and then on top of it, it's usually Pancake Sunday or Waffle Sunday turned into, because the kids and the wife, he wanted it to be Pizza Sunday, and you know how I am with pizza. So we went Pizza Sunday, and I couldn't control myself as usual, ordered way too much, then gorged myself. I mean, it was like, you know, just think of our sales department when we, you know, have free food come in. Like when Hooters
yes.
comes in, that's what it was like with me. And then I made the rookie mistake of rather than just gorge myself early and be done with it, I decided that there was still some pizza left, so I would have a second helping, you know, later in the day, closer to when I was going to actually lay down, which is a complete disaster, nightmare.
So this is really just an issue between you and yourself, that you can't control yourself when it comes to pizza.
Food in general. I mean, me and you are the same person. If it's sitting around, unless I throw it away, I'm going to eat it. So that's exactly what I did. And then for the rest of the night, between trips to the bathroom and then trying to lay down, you know, breathing hot fire because the acid reflux was like, it was actually like I could feel the acid like come all the way up my throat into my mouth. It was a nightmare. I barely slept. It was awful. It was horrendous.
Oh. Well, it sounds
decided
a miserable Sunday.
All of a sudden, what I was going to do was just throw aside the fact that I'm a bit lactose intolerant. Now, you know, forget that. I'll battle through it and then just eat, you know, 2.5 large, you know, pizzas.
Sounds like you're setting yourself up for failure.
No, it failed.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't set up. I failed miserably.
You failed.
It was a disaster.
You're setting yourself up for when you're older and when everything that you eat or have bothers you in some capacity. You're getting that in your 30s now.
I can't even smell. I went into the refrigerator. We kept a couple slices of cheese for the kids, and I almost vomited. Like, I had to run to the bathroom. It's coming. It's bad. It was horrendous. It was a huge mistake.
You're a puppy. Awful. You are a human puppy is what you are.
It's exactly what I am. I can't control myself. I ordered we ended up having 5 pizzas, which was a mistake.
5 pizzas?
Like, well, yeah, 5, because I felt like, well, I would like a grandma's, and then, well, I like some buffalo chicken, and I do like the sausage, and then, you know, Cassie's going to make the taco pizza. And it was a mess. It was a complete mess, Dave.
I was popping
Tums like they were Tic Tacs last night, and they did nothing. Nothing.
All right, well, we hope that the draft conversation will put you in better feeling. Because I think, and Chris, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I really think the Jets and the Giants both did well this weekend. I think that the Giants addressed a lot of needs, offensive line, secondary, and I think the Jets did the same. I thought Joe Douglas was very fluid in the way he was able to manipulate this draft, make a couple of deals, and I really like what both teams had to do.
No, I like what both teams did, too. If I was nitpicking, I would probably give the Giants a little bit better grade than I'd give the Jets, so I look at the Giants draft, I would probably put a B-plus letter grade on it, and I would give the Jets a solid B. With the Giants draft, I think there's a lot to like, Dave. I think that you got, you know, 2 starters, with your first and second round picks and Andrew Thomas and Xavier McKinney. And then I think paired in the next 2 or 3 seasons figures to be your right tackle. So I look at that situation. I feel good about that on the offensive line. They got 3 draft picks and then they threw bodies at the problem on the defensive side of the ball. And all of the Giants draft picks, with the exception of Parrott, played at big-time programs, a high level of competition. So hopefully they bring that competitive weakness to the Giants, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You don't have a lot of guys on that side of the ball that you feel good about being the solution at that respective position for the future. But the one thing that I will say is if you get enough guys, enough young players competing, you'll be able to find some diamonds in the rough. And I think that's exactly what Dave Gettleman did.
Yeah, I mean, still a couple. And again, I mean, Chris, I think you used the perfect word. I mean, if you can just sit here and, you know, on Monday and start nitpicking, I mean, there's a couple things that stand out that maybe you would have liked to seen addressed, I think, for both teams.
Yeah.
I think edge pass rush is still going to be a big problem for both of these teams. What Joe Douglas did, and I mean, clearly he had a plan. You saw it in free agency. He comes from, you know, two organizations with Baltimore and Philly that, I mean, look what Baltimore did in this year's draft. They had an unbelievable draft.
Oh, they were
draft.
Great. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, the draft really well. Fundamentally, I really liked what he did. I like the fact that he, you know, he had his board. He had certain values on certain players. He didn't reach. He made a move back. The only thing that concerns me a little bit about the move back is, you know, it's great if Denzel Mims turns out to be the goods. You only drafted one wide receiver. So if he turns out to be great, it ends up being, you know, a good move to sit and wait, move back and get another pick. But I mean, at the time, it makes me a little nervous that the Pittsburgh Steelers are synonymous with drafting good wide receivers. And, you know, Claypool goes to the Steelers. So there were some other wide receivers available that they could have had if they didn't trade back. But again, I mean, this is all what you see on paper now. We'll see what, you know, Denzel Mims turns into, but he was the only wide receiver that you drafted.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And that would be the one thing. And again, we don't know. He could turn out to be a stud, and you'll look back and be like, boy, did we hit a home run with receiver in that draft. But I would tend to agree with you that as far as Douglas is concerned, again, I think they did really well overall, the Jets, because I think they really emphasized on fixing the offensive line, which hopefully they were able to do. But one wide receiver, I mean, and it's a project wide receiver, so I would have either preferred to, you know, take a wide receiver. What I would have preferred, Chris, to be honest with you, is just to take multiple wide receivers. I think that was the way to go. And taking one, yeah, I think leaves you a little bit wanting more. But other than that, I like what Joe Douglas had to do this weekend.
Yeah, we had Kuiper on with Barton Hahn last week, and he said he would be surprised if the Jets didn't walk away from the weekend without having drafted at least three wide receivers. And the fact that they only took one is a little bit of a head scratcher. But I guess Joe Douglas feels good about where that room is right now, and he wanted to focus on other areas of the team. The one thing I will say about the Jets draft is that when I'm looking at the players that they selected, it doesn't feel like they have a lot of guys that were drafted this weekend that project to be starters 3 years from now. And I guess that's ultimately how I end up judging a draft. How many starters did you get for your football team over the course of the next 3 years? If I can say there that I've got three or four guys that I feel confident about being starters at some point in the next 3 years, then you had a pretty damn good draft. Right now, I'm looking at the Jets draft, and outside of Mekhi Becton, I really don't see a lot of guys that you can say with any degree of confidence you feel like that guy will develop into a starter.
But you could clearly tell what he was trying to accomplish, right? I mean, he was, especially when you look at their last, I think it was five picks, I mean, all team captains. I think he was looking for some speed, some versatility, and, you know, he wanted to, I think to a certain degree, you know, start to build the foundation for the kind of culture he wants to have inside of that locker room, which is important, which I like. But, I mean, again, did I think you needed to draft James Morgan in the fourth round? Probably not. I mean, one of the wide receivers that I know you like, Dave, and I like a lot, Tyler Johnson from Minnesota.
Yes.
I would have liked to. I get that Bryce Hall is, I mean, where he was drafted, that's, you know, good value. But still, I mean, Tyler Johnson's a good wide receiver. Does he have some drop problems? Yeah, he does. But, I mean, he's got tons of production at the college level. So I would have liked to have seen at least one more wide receiver. I think the punter was a good pick. I mean, he's got a cannon of a leg, especially considering that the Jets led the NFL in punts last year. So you use him quite a bit.
I mean, it's funny you say that, but yeah, no.
Y'all know honestly how I feel about kickers. I guess the only good thing that you could probably say about the kid is that he's not the guy that the Patriots drafted. But that being said, you know, Rick, I don't necessarily have a problem with the James
Nike drafted.
What's up,
Chris? Nike, the dog drafted that kicker.
Oh, that's what it was.
That's what made that pick. His dog drafted.
You know what? With the James Morgan pick, though, Rick, I don't much mind that. I mean, that was one of three fourth round picks that you had, and if you look at it, you can look at him as a developmental player, and he can potentially bring you something back of significance down the road. Like when I saw that, it's just like, wow, a fourth round pick is nothing to sneeze at. But if you're talking about a guy that can show in flashes during the preseason and in spot duty in the regular season that he could be a competent NFL quarterback, who's to say you couldn't pull off a deal in the future that would bring you back a third-round pick or a second-round pick? So to me, I look at Joe Douglas making that decision as developing an asset, you know, for somewhere down the line the next 3 or 4 years, and also being able to have a competent quarterback, because what did that offense look like last year when you didn't have Sam Darnold? Those three games were horrendous. So they needed to figure out a better backup option, and I think James Morgan can develop into that.
100% they did. Now, if he's going to be the guy that's going to be able to do that or not, you know, remains to be seen, but absolutely. And you'd think,
you knew you didn't have the guy on your roster, right?
No. God, no.
You didn't have that guy. So.
Now, I don't know if you do still, but at least you have a better chance of having him now than you did 3 days ago. I would agree with that unequivocally. I mean, I was actually surprised. I'm still surprised that the Jets look like they're going to go into this season with this level of backup. I don't love that at all, Rick.
No, I don't love it either. And the reason why, I mean, I mentioned that pick is, and maybe part of it too was, I mean, he was the one quarterback kind of linked to the Patriots that they seem to like. So maybe you keep him away from the Patriots. Maybe that was part of the thinking too. I mean, you saw what Philly, I mean, Joe Douglas comes from Philly, and Philly drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. So, I mean, maybe there's something to be said, you know, about developing, you know, the most important position, having that as an asset. I have a hard time believing that James Morgan, especially with this kind of offseason, is going to have any impact in the upcoming season. If God forbid something happens to Sam Darnold, but I just look at one of those picks that maybe somewhere down the line you do get some value back, but it's a pick that I never want to see on the field ever. I mean, as good as he could be, I want to see Sam Darnold and Sam Darnold only.
Well, of course, he's your franchise quarterback. I mean, you're building around him. It's year three now. It's time, right?
Yeah, but here's the point though, Dave. Look at, I mean, you tell me, we sat here for how many people did you listen to on every sports talk radio show, on ESPN and everyone else, talk about why Tom Brady would leave the Patriots? Because of what? Because he had no weapons, right?
Because he had nothing in New England, yeah.
Okay, and so he goes to a team that has weapons. You tell me, I mean, does Sam Darnold have the appropriate weapons around him right now?
Which is why we go back to the original point that I made, and Chris, man, you made as well, is I don't understand what they were doing with the wide receiver position in this draft.
No, yes, that concerns me a little bit.
It should concern you a little bit, because you realize that you can't ask Sam Darnold to do it all, but you hope that Mekhi Becton is the goods and that the guys that Joe Douglas brought in free agency can fill in and be contributors, and you solidify that offensive line. I think that's where it starts for him. Clearly, he's putting his money where his mouth is, or in this case, his draft capital. So a lot of how this draft is viewed will hinge on how good Mekhi Becton is, and he's going to be a day one guy. I mean, you put the 11th overall pick in him. There's no time to slowly groom him and then introduce him to the offensive line. He has to be a starter, and he has to be a good starter day one. If he's not, then I guess you'd have to look at Joe Douglas's first draft as a little bit of a disappointment.
I just think when you look at, I mean, outside of the Patriots, because of, I mean, they didn't have enough weapons last year with the greatest of all time at quarterback. So Jared Stidham now with, you know, a healthy Julian Edelman, they still don't have a, you know, great weapons as far as, you know, skill positions on the Patriots, but they do have Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. So you rely on that. But, I mean, look at the skill positions in your division. Look what Buffalo did. I mean, and then look what Miami has. They bring in Matt Breida. You got Jordan Howard, Devontae Parker. I mean, the Jets in their own division, and Chris, you always say this, the easiest way to make the playoffs is to compete and win your division.
Yep.
I mean, you tell me. I mean, where do the Jets' offensive weapons rank in their own division? Third? Maybe? Third?
At best.
Okay, so, I mean, you're talking about a quarterback in his third year. Again, most valuable thing to have in sports is a quarterback on a rookie deal. I mean, he's good, but you're trying to get him to a point where he's great. So, I mean, have you surrounded him with the appropriate amount of talent to get the best out of Sam Darnold yet? I would probably say no.
Probably not yet. Here, 800-919-3776, we take your calls on the draft. But here's the thing, it's year one. Right. It's, I mean, let's be fair. Barren, right? You would agree barren as far as, you know, skill position players. I mean, Jamison Crowder is probably your most skilled wide receiver, and he's certainly not a great wide receiver, but it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, there's a lot of things to fix with this team. So you're right. I mean, we all agree. Receiver is still a need for this organization, but next year's draft is supposed to be as deep as this year's draft in wide receiver. It's supposed to be terrific. And I go back to, I'm going to give Joe Douglas the benefit of the doubt until there's a reason not to give him the benefit of the doubt.
No, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt, and you have to see what his draft picks and what his free agent signings ultimately do. on the field on Sundays this coming fall. But, I mean, as far as skill positions go in the AFC East, I don't think it's going out on a limb to say the Jets have the worst skill position group in the AFC East. I mean, I like what the Miami Dolphins have at wide receiver a hell of a lot more than I like what the Jets have. And then when you look at running backs, they just traded for Matt Breida. So you got Breida and you got Jordan Howard down there to start off with in your backfield. So that's not bad for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And then for a young Tua Tagovailoa, whenever you decide to put him on the field. When you look at the Jets, they don't really have any skill position players that can dictate front and coverage outside of Le'Veon Bell. And I'm sorry, if you're trying to make your quarterback's life a little bit easier, you got to have a weapon for him outside of the numbers that can take the top off of the defense and that can take that extra defender out of the box. They just don't have that guy. So I don't understand why the Jets didn't be more aggressive this weekend with trying to draft wide receivers. But I mean, listen, you just got to hope that the offensive line is exponentially better, and that way you get a much better version of Sam Darnold.
Right. But doesn't it have to be? I mean, look at what the offensive line was last year, Rick. It was brutal. I mean, he was sacked a ton. The backup quarterback was sacked. Whoever was the guy was sacked a ton. You've now revamped the offensive line prior to the draft and now added multiple legitimate pieces during the draft. It has to be better this coming season.
No, it has to be better. You're absolutely right. And again, I give Joe Douglas a ton of credit for addressing that. But I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, having a legitimate number one option, either as, you know, your running back, and we'll see how they decide to use Lev Bell this year. Hopefully, you know, that relationship between him and Adam Gase is fixed headed into the season. I mean, you're already paying him, might as well use him, but they really don't. I mean, between, you know, Crowder, Perriman, and Mims, I mean, you tell me who would scare the hell out of a defense.
None of them.
Besides Lev Bell.
None of them.
And at this point, they don't use Lev Bell right. So, I mean, it concerns me a little bit. And I think that's part of the reason why headed into the draft, we kind of, you know, threw around the idea, especially now when you see what he went for, is maybe reaching out to Washington and see if you get Trent Williams to address the offensive line and then have the ability with the 11th overall pick to get a legitimate number one wide receiver.
I'll tell you what.
That could have been an option.
With the deal that went down for Trent Williams, if I was a Jets fan, I would be disappointed because I thought he was going to garner a lot more. And a third and a five is what you got in exchange for Leonard Williams. So yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, and he's a proven commodity. Now he's going to cost money. That's different than what Mekhi Becton's going to cost. But yeah, I would agree with you. I was very surprised, Chris, that Trent Williams only went for a third and a fifth round pick.
Yeah, when I saw the compensation going back to the Redskins, I was surprised that there weren't a lot more teams involved in that. But I mean, you are talking about a guy that's on the other side of 30, a guy that has had some injury concerns in the past, and a guy who you're going to have to address his contract. So I think when you factor all of that in, that changes the draft picks that you're going to send back in return for the player. But I mean, still, if you're in a position like the Jets, if you can add a proven commodity at the tackle position like Trent Williams, I don't see why you wouldn't get involved in that, why you wouldn't decide to make that move. I mean, this year's third round pick, that wouldn't have been too much to ask in order to make that decision. I mean, Ashton Davis from California, is he supposed to be that good where you couldn't justify passing on him to send a third round pick to the Washington Redskins for Trent Williams? I don't know. You guys tell me, but if it's all about Sam Darnold, I understand you have to have a really good defense, but you had a good defense last year. To me, this was about fortifying the offensive line as best you could and then putting as many weapons around him as you possibly could. And I just feel like the Jets could have done more. I guess that's the part where it's a little bit disappointing. They had other options. They could have done more, and it didn't seem like they did.
All right, let's get to the calls. 800-919-3776. Let's start with Omar in East Brunswick. Omar, welcome aboard on a Monday morning on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, I hope you guys had a great weekend and you enjoyed the draft very much. It was such a relief, honestly, to be able to just have something on TV that I didn't expect. I didn't know what to expect. But so I'm a big Jet fan. I got to give credit to Joe Douglas. I mean, we really haven't had a GM like this. I really liked it how he turned when he traded back that first second round pick. He turned that one pick into four separate picks. I thought that was genius. I was amazed by that. But at the same time, as good as he did, there's only one thing that I can say. One thing and one thing only. I think it was a mistake not drafting another receiver. I think when you look at our receiving core, Perryman, injury prone. Crowder is sometimes injury prone. And Newman, Rick, you know this. He's out almost every year. And Mims is a rookie. So right now we're counting on Mims, a rookie, and Jamison Crowder. And God knows, what about the other guys? I'm seriously confused. I was confused. I love how he addressed death. I know what he drafted. We needed those positions. Maybe, like Chris said, you know, get that third-round pick, trade that for Trent Williams. I think, personally, that would have been awesome. When I saw this,
Omar,
I was like, what?
Omar. Yes, Omar, a couple things quickly, and I don't even know, I mean, once, you know, if he does pass his physical, I don't even know if Quincy Enunwa ends up on this team or not, but here's a couple things. My biggest concern, and this was something that go back to USC with Sam Darnold, is he is ridiculously talented. And sometimes when you're as talented as Sam Darnold and you don't have a lot of talent around you, you try to do too much. And when you try to do too much, that's when you start making mistakes. So guys like that, I like to surround with a lot of talent so they don't feel like they have to do everything. And right now, I feel like he could be in a position where, because he has limited weapons, that his natural instincts kick in and his competitiveness, where he does try to do too much and makes too many mistakes. And the other thing I will say, as far as some of the people that I spoke to over the weekend with the Trent Williams thing, apparently part of the reason why that deal happened the way it happened is because of Trent Williams' willingness to go to San Francisco and try to work himself into San Francisco. Part of the thing, too, was that, you know, maybe he makes it so difficult, because there was a bunch of teams that were asking about him, as far as, well, I'm not going to play for that team, and if you do trade me, I'm going to ask for $22 million, whatever it ended up being. Like, he clearly, with his relationship, and don't forget Kyle Shanahan was in Washington.
Yep.
That was really where he wanted to end up going. So, right, that would be benefit of the doubt. Like, I would give Joe Douglas that kind of benefit of the doubt
maybe
he did ask.
Maybe so.
It makes a lot of sense.
Omar, we appreciate it. But, you know, because there were reports on Saturday that the Vikings were interested in
He
didn't want to go there. So maybe. But here's the thing. And again, I think Joe Douglas did well, and I don't want this to be a beat him up in his first ever draft. I really don't. All I'm saying is, I thought when we got to here, right, we're April 27th, we're past free agency, we're past the draft, that the Jets would have better skill position players. I mean, Quincy, no, forget it. That to me is, if he's anything, that's a blessing, but I don't expect anything from him. So now, Perryman, Crowder, Mims, Griffin,
Doxson.
Yeah, I mean, this, I thought right now, sitting here, that we would talk about the Jets having better skill position guys than they do.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. I mean, they drafted Denzel Mims. We don't know what he's gonna be, but we would feel a lot better about the Jets receiver situation if you threw more bodies at the problem. We realized that they had a depleted wide receiver core and that they needed an influx of talent at that position. We felt like if you had more guys, you give yourself a better chance at being able to solve that problem, and they didn't go that direction. So I just feel like they could have done more, but they didn't. I mean, at this point, you have to trust Joe Douglas. We'll wait and see what it is. But in terms of the areas that we felt like they absolutely had to address, they did address them, but they could have done more, and I don't blame Jets fans for wanting to see more of that, which is why I probably grade their draft at a B and not better.
Yeah, I think you realize when you watch this draft and you see what some of these teams are doing, and maybe it depends on the division that you play in. Like, if you're playing in the AFC West and you're trying to keep up with Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, maybe you kind of swing more towards offense. But a lot of these teams with young quarterbacks, I mean, Buffalo did it. They traded for Steph Diggs. I mean, look at what Denver did for their young quarterback. I mean, they took first two rounds. Yeah, they had big time weapons. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, man. You're trying to surround your quarterback, unless you're the Green Bay Packers, with as many offensive weapons as possible. And I don't think, I mean, again, this is just nitpicking. I think he had, for the most part, a really good draft. Is that I would have liked to have seen at least one more wide receiver drafted.
And I completely concur. The only thing I'll say on the flip side of that is that he obviously prioritized offensive line. He's an offensive lineman. We know that. That's where his history comes from. And he said, look, I look at these two things, and for me, offensive line is unequivocally what has to be fixed first. So hopefully that's been fixed. And like you said earlier, Rick, that's been fixed to the point that the mediocre receiver, whatever you want to consider them, or you know, the average that they have at receiver, is better because the offensive line happens to be better this coming season. Because it looks like, and hopefully they did, knock on wood, fix the offensive line, Chris.
No, it looks like they fixed the offensive line. I mean, you feel good about the starters that they have penciled in. You got Becton at left tackle, and then you'll see what happens at right tackle with Edoga and with George Font. But, I mean, Alex Lewis, you re-signed him to play left guard. He was solid toward the end of the season. You went out and got the best center in free agency in Connor McGovern, and you still got Brian Winters at right guard. So, I mean, the Jets should feel a lot better about what their offensive line situation is going to be, and thereby feel a lot better about what their offense is going to be. Because, Dave, it can't be any worse than what it was last year. You had the worst offense in the NFL, and your head coach's reputation and his expertise is on that side of the ball. So you feel confident about that group turning it around with having Sam Darnold being able to, you know, have another year under his belt with learning that system and then having the offensive line fortified. But, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on the Jets this year to make a playoff push. A lot of pressure on their head coach. We'll wait and see. But, I mean, as far as what Joe Douglas has done, he's addressed the positions that we said needed to be addressed at the start of the offseason.
All right, so here's a tweet that I get. This is why it's frustrating to me. Travis Thompson tweets in, so is today just a day where you guys destroyed Joe Douglas? They hit the needs they had to and can protect Sam. Giving Sam time to throw is more important at the moment. He says Jets fans absolutely love this draft. I like the draft as well. And I don't think that any of us have remotely destroyed Joe Douglas. I think the point that all of us have made individually and collectively is that if there was one thing we would have liked to see more come out of this draft, it's more playmakers. You add a guy who, I mean, we'll talk to Mel Kiper in a couple minutes, is a project who I don't know that in perfect situation you can expect him to come out and be good this year, especially with what we're going to deal with now with training camp and all that stuff. So that's my only point. I think Douglas did well. I think he did well in free agency and well in the draft, Rick. I just think I would have liked to see more as far as receivers are concerned.
I completely agree with you. It's not our job to sit here and wax poetic about what Joe Douglas did. I think he did a good job, but it's our job to kind of, you know, pick away at some of the things that we would have liked to seen done. I mean, my only concern is this, is that you're asking a kid in his third year to make, I mean, a young kid that doesn't have, you know, a whole hell of a lot of experience to now all of a sudden make a bunch of okay, you know, mediocre wide receivers into great wide receivers. I don't care how much time you have. If your wide receivers can't create separation in a division that may have as a division have the best secondaries in the sport. Let's not forget that, too. And you really have no number one option? I mean, that concerns me a little bit. I don't care how much time your quarterback has. If your wide receivers can't create separation, then you're going to have a hard time moving the football and having success. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, you have to hope that Joe Douglas hit on Denzel Mims and that some of the flyers that he took with Josh Doctson and Breshad Perriman pan out. Jamison Crowder continues to be what he is in the slot, and then Chris Herndon and Ryan Griffin pick up when they left off in terms of being the best versions of themselves at the tight end spot. That's what you have to hope right now. And that Adam Gase is more focused on trying to find creative ways to use Lev Bell. That's what you're leaning on right now, because based on what they did in the draft, I just don't see a lot of reinforcements for your skill position core coming in from that avenue. So you have to hope that these guys, another year under Adam Gase, you know, Adam Gase is able to figure out how best to utilize their skill set and that those guys have a better understanding and can become more productive in that system.
And the man who had a sensational weekend, like if you were grading the guys that grade the draft, Rick, don't you think you'd give Mel Kiper a solid A+?
I mean, if there was a grade higher than an A+, I would give it to him.
Right. Like, I mean, especially the double plus, maybe.
Yeah, and then on top of the fact that, I mean, he does what everyone would like to do, which is eat pumpkin pie.
You're obsessed with that. Of course you.
I love it.
Our eating friend on the show is obsessed that Mel has pumpkin pie every morning. All right, let's bring him in, the great Mel Kiper Jr. Good morning, Mel. How you doing, buddy?
I appreciate that, guys. A lot of people would say C- D+, but so I appreciate the grade. You're very, very, very generous graders, but I appreciate that. I do have some pumpkin pie wedding. That was a lot of fun. Having Daniel Jeremiah there, who's a good friend of mine. Yeah, Dan was there and really did a great job. So, and all the guys, I mean, what Trey does, you know, is remarkable. You don't know how much, how many moving pieces there are around him, and to be up there anchoring that from Bristol and Lewis and Booger and everybody, Adam and Mort, it was a lot of fun. And Michael Irvin and all the guys that can contributor from the NFL Network. We had a great time. It was even day three. I mean, it moved along, and it was a fun day three. So just a credit to Brian Ryder and Rob Adamski and all the producers that do such. So they work every day all year for this. I mean, they have all their stuff they do during football season, but they're always every day there's a few hours contributing to developing a draft plan. So kudos to those guys, and I appreciate all your comments, guys.
Mel, before we get even to the teams and the drafts and everything,
sure.
Were you guys worried, like, just from an ESPN logistical mm-hmm. standpoint, you've been doing this forever, right, almost 40
right.
years, and you've never
mm-hmm.
had to endure a draft like this. Were you a little bit concerned coming into this draft that there could be some hiccups?
No, not at all. No, because we had done run-throughs, and I know how prepared the guys were for anything that could happen. We had backup plans. We had all kinds of things going. We had already tested everything. We had done rehearsals. We had done everything. And really, I think everybody, they always say preparation. You know, you're not nervous when you're prepared. So I think everybody was supremely prepared. The NFL was as well. All the teams were. It wasn't anything. I mean, there's a lot of people dealing with a lot of things in this country right now and dealing with a lot of heartache. And just the thoughts and prayers were with everybody. So this is the least of our worries, was how this was going to go off. We were hoping it would. If it didn't, it didn't. I mean, the bottom line is, like I said, there's a lot more things, more pressing and more important than what we were doing, and we looked at it that way, and we wanted to basically get people an opportunity to experience something and that was a little normal and could be a something that they could get their minds off everything that's going on right now. And I think that's what people wanted, and I'm glad the NFL was able to keep it on schedule and deliver it the way they did.
Well, you guys did an amazing job. All right, let's get to the actual football side of this right
sure.
now. So we started the show talking about the Jets, and we're all in agreement. We love what the Jets have done. Looks like they've really revamped the offensive line a lot. The only thing that we would say, if people are critiquing us on Twitter, this is ridiculous, what a dumb point, is one wide receiver, and it's a project wide receiver. So give us an overall view of the Jets and then, kind of get into the nitty-gritty of should they have taken more than one wide out in this draft?
Well, I think this. I think, it depends how it falls. I would have probably taken two or three, but what happened this year, guys, they gobbled them up. If you saw them, they went. The 16 went in the first two, three rounds, and then they had a lot of guys, the key guys, even James Prochet. The Ravens gobbled him up. They traded up to pick 201, with the Minnesota Vikings and got James Prochet. From SMU. So they didn't allow a lot of these guys to slip through. So maybe their ratings didn't work in unison with who was available. So I don't have a problem with it. I'm saying I would have taken two or three. Maybe I would have only taken two. But Denzel Mims, to get him where they did, makes sense. He's still a little bit of a developmental receiver coming out of that Baylor offense, but he's got freakish talent. He adapted really well to the Senior Bowl practices. And that was, I think, important in this evaluation. Or he might have been a third-round pick. So, again, I think getting Denzel Mims with his size, his athleticism, his hands, will be somebody Sam Darnold, I think, will really like moving forward. A little surprised with the quarterback in the fourth round, but James Morgan was a guy I highlighted as a late-round pick who I thought could have a chance to maybe be a starter down the road. Bryce Hall would have gone higher had it not been for the injury. P. Ryan can catch the ball out of the backfield very effectively. And, of course, Ashton Davis, had it not been for the injury, a lot of people are thinking cornerback or safety, certainly special teams, he's great, so he made sense. So they really got a lot, and Braden Mann can boom the football. I mentioned Shane Leckler came out of Texas A&M, and Braden Mann's got a huge leg. Cameron Clark, if you're wondering about him coming out of Charlotte, he did a great job in that Clemson game. That was what I really highlighted with him when he was drafted, is when you do what he did against Clemson and those athletes there, that, I think, made Cameron Clark a prospect that looked a little interesting when he came off the board.
Mel, I want to ask you this, and I want to go back to the first round. I mean, in your opinion, and again, it's a crapshoot. I mean, they're trying to address the offensive line, so it ends up being, which player you like the best. In your opinion, given the choice between Becton and Wirfs, would you have taken Becton, or would you have considered Wirfs?
Well, Becton was the left tackle, and I had a high grade on him. Obviously, the test, the result, and then there was talk about what his weight is going to be. We always knew the weight was a concern, but if he can manage that weight, and it looks like he is going to keep it around 360, 365, knock it up to 385, 390, then you're not a left tackle any longer. So I think the key there is weight management. They know that. He knows that. But he's a great player. If he's at 360, 365, he's a dancing bear out there. He's got great feet. He's got that mean streak. He's a heck of a left tackle. If, like I say, and that's what what they're hoping for, and that's what they figure that, okay, Tristan Wirfs was a right tackle. He played a few games at left tackle. Mekhi Becton was a left tackle who would have been, you know, probably a higher pick had it not been for that test result. So I think you look at where Andrew Thomas went. I had him ahead of Andrew Thomas. So again, I think Mekhi Becton made a lot of sense. He should be a guy along with Cameron Clark, that, and I think Cameron Clark is a little bit underrated coming in as well. But I do think Mekhi Becton, hopefully you can just lock him over there at left tackle, put him over there, and forget about it for 8 to 10 years.
Mel, you touched on this player briefly. Ashton Davis, the DB out of Cal. Now, safety is not a position of need for the Jets, but I know a lot of NFL teams have sub-packages, nickel, dime, where they have multiple defensive backs. But what did you make of the Jets using a high third-round pick on bringing in Ashton Davis?
I think it's a good move, Chris, because I think he's so versatile. And I think a lot of people, I thought Seattle might look at him. You know, they like taking those tall, big safeties with length and putting them in the corner. Did it with Trey Flowers and others. So I thought some people may jump at him a little earlier than that. I think the injury maybe pushed him down just a bit. Special teams, you know what he can do there. We know how athletic he is and how he can move and how, you know, what he can do from a versatility standpoint. I think Ashton Davis in the late first, even there were some people thought maybe somebody would take him there. Had we had a normal draft process, maybe he would have. I thought at worst he was going mid to late second, and then where they got him, and then Zuniga as well. I mean, they got players that were at, I think, nice points. We talk about value points with Mims, with Davis, even Zuniga and Pirine, Clark in the fourth, Hall in the fifth because of the injury, even Mann, the punter, in the sixth. So they did a good job, I think, lining things up with where guys were projected or maybe even getting them at a point where they were a bargain. So, no, I think when you look at where Ashton Davis was taken with his skill set and the fact that he can wear multiple hats potentially in that secondary and help out on special teams, I think that'll, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you'll look at that pick as one of the better ones in this draft.
Mel Kiper Jr. with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So I know that you didn't have Andrew Thomas as your highest-ranking offensive tackle, but, you know, walk us through Thomas and then kind of give us an overview of how you think the Giants did this past weekend.
Yeah, Thomas was the left. I think what Dave Gettleman says, I just want to prove an entity. I just want a guy, and then with Becton having that test result, they may be the safe pick here. I'm going to go with a guy who has played 2 years at left tackle after playing that first year at right tackle opposite Isaiah Wynn and have him. He really did a good job assisting DeAndre Swift. A lot of DeAndre Swift's yards came running behind Andrew Thomas. So he's not just one-dimensional. He can move you off the line. And I think for Saquon Barkley and for Daniel Jones, that's two key guys, obviously. That's your franchise. And now they have a guy like Andrew Thomas coming in. And Matt Peart, don't forget about him. I mean, this kid is a great athlete, incredibly long arms. Gosh, you can speak to how that arm length assists these guys with really good feet. He's still developing. He didn't play football until high school. But he's a kid that caught my eye in several games as a guy that is a developmental left tackle. He can get it done. So I think with Thomas, people say, what's a reach? Well, he wasn't going any later than 10 to Cleveland, more than likely. So if you like him, just take him. They did it last year, and teams have been doing that. If they like a player, they have a grade high enough, and they feel he can be an immediate hole filler at left tackle. In a draft where Wirfs was a right tackle, Wills, I love Wills, but he was only a right tackle at Alabama. We're projecting him to left tackle in Cleveland because they have Jack Conklin. But he wanted a guy, I know what he can do at that spot. I'm going to put him right out there. It's not going to be a learning process. Andrew Thomas had 2 full years as a left tackle against the best competition in the SEC.
Hey, Mel, of the Giants pick, I mean, of their picks, and again, we just went over Andrew Thomas, no-brainer left tackle. Was Xavier McKinney in the second round your favorite pick that the Giants made as far as value was concerned?
One of my favorite picks in the entire draft, guys. He was 15 on the big board. I didn't think he'd go 15. I just had him there as a pure football player. He was at 15. The 4.6, 3.40, not having a chance to make up for that probably hurt him a bit. But in safety, not a priority position. We saw that even Antoine Winfield Jr. from Minnesota dropped a little bit. Look at Davis dropping into the third round. They prioritize the cover men. Even A.J. Terrell gets all the way up at 16 coming out of Clemson after struggling mightily against Jamar Chase in that championship game. So you see how the priority is corner. Safeties will drop a little bit. I don't get it. I mean, they have great. He's going to be a great leader on this team. He's going to set the tempo on this team. We know what Jamal Adams does with the Jets. Xavier McKinney will do the same thing. And look where Adams went in the top group. Here's McKinney in the second round. Like I said, I had him at 15. I think that's one of the best picks in the entire draft. I love Darnay Holmes as a slot corner. Carter Coughlin's going to give you everything he has getting after the quarterback. Brunson, I thought, was a little underrated. So overall, you look at that draft, they got a lot of guys are going to help. I was with Cam Brown at the airport coming back from the combine. Cam was not happy around that 4.72. He's got versatility. Wore a lot of hats in that Penn State defense. So I think they did a solid job. But I do, of all the picks, I do love the McKinney pick in the second round.
Mel, going into this weekend, Dave Gettleman said he wanted to fix the offensive line once and for all. You touched on Andrew Thomas and Matt Paird. They also drafted Shane Lemieux, a guy that started 50 games out at Oregon at guard. Do you think Dave Gettleman accomplished his goal of solidifying that offensive line for Daniel Jones?
I really think he's on his way to doing it. I like Thomas. Only thing Thomas has to work on is he's a little high, plays a little high, and it gives away up some inside pressure at times. But they'll work on that technically. He's got great feet. He's a tremendous kid. He didn't make mistakes. He's really smart. He wants to be great. They raved about his work ethic and his knowledge of the game when I talked to them back this past summer. So again, I think he will. I think certainly Matt Peart, you got to develop him. He needs a year of coaching. I think you look at Lemieux. Lemieux, as you said, is a veteran who was, I thought, a solid guard. Not great, but solid. And I thought he was one of the better. Penei Sewell is going to be a top 2-3 pick next year, the left tackle. He was their next best lineman. I thought he was much better than Throckmorton of the linemen. So I like Lemieux from that standpoint. So, yes, I think for what they had, the depth of tackle wasn't good. To get Peart where they did made a lot of sense. So, yeah, I would give them a lot of credit for doing the best they could to try to help this offensive line.
Mel Kiper Jr. with us here, 98.7 ESPN. All right, Mel, we've touched on the local teams a little bit. Let's go, you know, overview of the NFL.
Sure.
Two or three teams do you look at and you say they did really, really well this weekend?
Well, I'll get to Baltimore. I thought they had the best draft, but I thought Cincinnati, for what they get coming back, Jonah Williams didn't play last year. That's like having an extra first-round pick. T. Higgins was the first pick in the second round. That's the first-round pick. That's like having three ones. You get Joe Burrow, you get Jonah Williams, you get T. Higgins. Then you talk about getting Logan Wilson, linebacker out of Wyoming, who can really move to the football. Akeem Davis-Gaither, another linebacker who's fast to the football. Marcus Bailey, who was injured a lot but has a lot of talent coming out of Purdue. They got him in the seventh round. They added DJ Reader. They added four DBs in free agency. Drew Sample was a second-round pick tight end last year coming out of Washington. So they got a lot of guys who, if they all come together, this could be a vastly improved football team. But Baltimore, I thought, had the best draft. Five offensive, five defense. They get the I call it a bonus pick in J.K. Dobbins. They weren't targeting a running back. They have Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, and Justice Hill. But yeah, Mark Ingram was banged up in that playoff game against Tennessee. You saw what the result was. And he's not getting any younger. So now you get J.K. Dobbins right in there with Ingram and what they have. Like I say, five, they solidified the offensive line. Got Phillips and Bredesen. They got two defensive linemen, two inside linebackers, a safety, two wide receivers that I like, Duvernay and Prochet. Like I say, I don't know how anybody objectively couldn't think the Baltimore Ravens draft was the best draft of any team in the NFL.
Mel, you know what was funny too, and we had, you know, all these different reports.
Sure.
I mean, early on the speculation was because it was a virtual draft, not a lot of pro days and everything else, that you'd see less movement, less trades. And then you had, conflicting reports that there'd be chaos. But sitting there watching the draft, it felt like, a lot of chalk, going through your article, a lot of teams did pretty well in this year's draft. The Colts had a really good draft. I thought Jacksonville had a good draft. For you, is there a team that stands out? Is there a team that stands out that had, in your opinion, a bad draft?
Atlanta, I thought, was a little bit of a straight reach for A.J. Terrell. A.J. Terrell did not play that bad against people got on him about Ja'Marr Chase in the LSU, and I mentioned that. He was in cover. He had the coverage. He just didn't look back for the ball. I mean, he was there. He was in position to make the play. It wasn't like Ja'Marr Chase athletically and speeds-wise just ate him up. A.J. Terrell's an athlete. A.J. Terrell just got to clean things up a little bit. Marlon Davidson's a nice player, but he's not a great pass rusher, but he's got scheme versatility. Hennessy, they got a center off to probably play guard. They didn't get in Hoffrichter, the punter, punted indoors. Now he's back indoors. He gets good hang time. I just felt like from a need standpoint, from some of the things they did, they forced that cornerback position when they maybe could have. I would have moved down. They could say, well, we didn't have an offer. I know the Raiders would have preferred to move down. They thought they could possibly. It didn't work out that way because the player the team wanted was taken before them, or they maybe would have gotten off of that pick when they took Damon Arnett and got him maybe in the 20s. But if you got to make a pick, you make a pick. They took A.J. Terrell. That's the key to their draft. He's got to be an immediate starter. They need him. They drafted him for that. I just thought 16 is high. If you're going to draft 16, you got to get a top 10 to 12 player on your board. I talked to teams about A.J. Terrell. They had late 1, early to mid 2 on him. So at 16, was it a reach? Yes. Does it mean he won't be a good player? No. You know, guys come into the league, they might be reaches, they turn out to be pretty good. So I can't bash him for that. In a draft like this, somebody's going to have, you know, a draft where you grade it as only average, and that would be the Atlanta Falcons right now.
Mel, I know we're both a little partial to Baltimore, but I thought they crushed the draft as well this weekend. But another team that I've got right up there in terms of winning the weekend is the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones said it was the best draft class that they had had going back to 2005, the class that I was a part of with DeMarcus Ware and Jay Ratliff. I mean, as far as I'm looking at it, I see four guys that they picked this weekend that can develop into starters in two or three seasons. How do you felt like the Dallas Cowboys came out of this weekend?
I'm with you, Chris. I'm with you on that. I had CeeDee Lamb going there in Mach 3.0, and people were I got calls from people saying, you're crazy. There's no way the Cowboys are taking a receiver. They just gave all that money to Amari Cooper. And my point was, they don't have a 3, and Gallup's a 2. So, and Amari Cooper doesn't have the attitude that this guy is a defensive mentality guy, Chris. You'd love this CeeDee Lamb. I mean, he plays, you know, he's stiff arms. He overpowers people. He's just an aggressive football player and a real warrior out there. So 50% of his production came inside, 50% outside. So I thought he'd be a great third option, second option. So I love that pick. And he would have gone within a teams or even thinking about trading up to get him. Had he dropped another pick or two, there would have been a trade up to get CeeDee Lamb. So I'm with you on that. I think Trayvon Diggs needs to clean things up a bit. Some had him in the first. I thought he was a 2. That's where they got him. I love Gallimore. Robinson was a hot guy. Reggie Robinson had a really good year at Tulsa. People were in my ear a lot in the 3-4 weeks leading up to the draft saying Robinson's moving up. And then Biotic kind of took on a little water. He moved down. And he's not Fred Frederick by any stretch, but he could be developed. And I love Bradley and I. He didn't run great, but he's a natural pass rusher, and he's fierce. And he did a good job against Austin Jackson. Austin Jackson went in the first round, and here he is in the fifth, and he got the best of Austin Jackson. So go figure. But that was a good draft for the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, Mel, last one from me, and that is the Green Bay Packers.
I'm with you.
just the first round. Like, they moved up to take a quarterback. You know Aaron Rodgers is going to be very unhappy about this. Is this a head-scratching move from your standpoint?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem at all with Love. The Love, I had 21, he went 26. You know, I understand what they're doing. They did it with Brett. They brought in Aaron. Now they bring in Jordan with already having Aaron. So it's like they're just doing it. They're flipping. The history repeats itself. But no, Jordan's got a lot of talent. Jordan just needs stability and continuity. He had 3 coordinators. He lost a key thing this year. His coordinator and his head coach and 9 starters at Utah State can't be replaced. This isn't LSU. So again, and they couldn't replace 9 starters. So you can't have all that talent leave and your head coach and your coordinator now be on your 3rd coordinator. So that, I think, affected Jordan Love. He was reckless with the ball because he was trying to do too much and trying to win games. Is it a big difference if you lose by 14 or 30? That was his attitude. I want to try to win the game. If I throw a couple picks, so be it. I got to try to do something. And I gave him credit for that. I didn't knock him for that. I gave him credit for that. But he'll have time to sit, watch, and learn. I just didn't understand not taking a receiver. Because Davante Adams had 83 catches. He missed 4 games with injury. The next receiver, wide receiver, had 35 catches. That was an undrafted free agent. That's 48 more than the next guy, and he didn't play in 4 games, Adams. I don't get in a wide receiver group that was as deep and talented as this one, how you come away with 0. I don't get that. I mean, for Aaron, he's got to be sitting there saying, okay, you drafted my heir apparent, and you didn't get me a receiver. And for Davante Adams, he's got to be sitting there saying, you didn't get anybody to help me again. So they had all talked about, well, we got Randall Cobb, we got Jordy Nelson, we got Davante Adams all in the second round. The draft's not over after round 1. But all they got was Josiah DeGore, a tight end who I like, but in the 3rd round, but no receiver. And even in the 7th round, they had a couple picks. They take a safety and a defensive end. Like I said, Baltimore's trading up for James Prochet in the 6th round after they already got Devin Duvernay earlier, and yet the Packers found no reason to make a move to get a receiver. Hey, it's baffling to me, but hey, they know more than I do. We'll see how it all works out.
All right, Mel, last one for me. You mentioned Xavier McKinney as being one of your favorite picks of the draft. Is there another pick, another player that stands out to you as maybe your favorite as far as value and everything else that goes into it, pick of the draft?
Great question. I think in terms of a Cole Kmet, a tight end, coming out of Notre Dame. He's a kid, goes to Chicago. A lot's going to be asked of him. You know, they have Grant. They really need somebody to emerge, a young tight end to help out. And a lot of these teams will go 2 tight ends. He can be a real factor for whether it's Foles or Trubisky with his size. He was a pitcher on the baseball team. He had a great year after he came back from that injury they had in August at that huge game against Georgia. I think he's a kid to really keep an eye on that can do a good job for you. And I, like I said, I think when you look at the Denver Broncos, and I go to them, I think getting Jerry Jeudy where they did, I mean, he's going to help out. It's another team. All they had was Cortland Sutton and nothing. And then Emmanuel Sanders moved on. They got to get Drew Lock weapons. They went out and got him. They also got K.J. Hamler. If he catches the ball more consistently, he could be a factor. But to your point about the best pick, Justin Strnad, their fifth-round pick, late fifth-round pick, almost the end of the fifth round, out of Wake Forest, had the biceps injury. Prior to that, he was all over the field. The year prior to that, he was making plays in covers, doing everything it takes to be today's kind of linebacker. I think he plays on the inside there. I like Justin Strnad, the linebacker from Wake Forest.
Mel, this will wrap it up for me. The Miami Dolphins came into this weekend in position to really control the draft. They had 14 picks. They ended up making 11. How did you feel that they did this weekend?
Well, I was just looking at them, before I did a couple shows this morning, and they really did it. They addressed the offensive line with not only Austin Jackson, who's a really good developmental. I say developmental. He needs a year of coaching. He got beaten by A.J. Epinesa and Bradley Anae. So Anae was a sixth-round pick. Epinesa was a second-round pick, and they got the best of him. So he needs some work technically, but he's got a lot of talent. He's a great kid. I think when you look at where Robert Hunt will be 2-3 years down the road, I think he'll be in a Pro Bowl as more of a guard than a right tackle, but he's another fierce competitor with that mean streak. Love watching him. And he also got Solomon Kinley, their underclassman guard from Georgia. So they got three linemen. I think Igbinoghene is a kick returner. If you value kick returner, if he gets any opportunities, watch out for him. He might have a touchdown in that area. But he's a developmental corner, former wide receiver. And Gus Malzahn said he was one of the most competitive players on that team. Jason Strobridge has versatility. I like Brandon Jones because he can cover in the slot, the safety. They got the long snapper. And I'll tell you, a guy I saw a lot of on the banks of the Severn River down in Annapolis at the Naval Academy, Malcolm Perry. How can you not love this kid? I mean, to watch him play quarterback for Navy, the things he did, I know he's a projection, but he can help out in the slot, maybe as a running back, return man, like an Antoine Randall-El type. I know Keenan Reynolds didn't get it done coming out at Navy offense as a quarterback, but hey, in the seventh round, I'll take Malcolm Perry any day of the week.
All right, Mel, listen, you're the best. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. You know how busy you are. Enjoy that pumpkin pie and don't be a stranger.
I'll try, guys. Enjoy it. You guys do a great job. Take care, man. See you.
Appreciate it. That, of course, is Mel Kiper Jr. He is amazing. I'm so impressed, Rick, that he sits with us for 20 minutes and recalls every single thing that just took place in the draft.
No, I was just going to say that. I don't think you can. I mean, you said A+. I don't think you can give him enough credit. And it's not even like he's searching for names, and they're not easy names. Like, he's going through the entire draft in his head, just going names and scouting reports for all these players. Dude, it is beyond impressive. You can clearly see why he's the best at what he does.
It's like he has a microchip in his brain. It really is unbelievable.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.